Stephen Main, shareholder activist, municipal councillor.
And I've left my training day to come and talk to you, Libby.
Tell us about this fantastic story that you're honouring us with your presence.
Well, I guess it is the world's greatest financial fraud. $75 billion disappearing in a Ponzi scheme run by the former chairman of the NASDAQ stock exchange, the world's first electronic stock exchange. So reverberations all over the world. Millionaires, charities, banks, companies, investors have collectively dropped $75 billion on a Ponzi scheme.
Oh.
And everyone is just shaking
their
heads.
That's $75 billion Australian, $50 billion US,
50
yeah?
billion US. So I guess, you know, at the end of a big year, the president's had shoes thrown at him.
He ducked well, didn't he?
He did duck very well. The American financial system has collapsed. We've lost Bear Stearns and we've lost Lehman Brothers, and now we've had the world's biggest fraud coming out of New York. So $75 billion is gone, and a lot of previously wealthy people are no longer wealthy, and everyone is saying this was extreme capitalism, no regulation, and oh my God, an amazing exclamation mark to finish off the financial crisis this year.
I don't quite understand. I have here the Royal Bank of Scotland said it could potentially lose about £400 million if all its investments had to be written off. What did they do? Did they give this man money to invest for them in hedge funds and he didn't invest it all?
Yeah, people all over the world gave him money and he then often would borrow against that money to make more investments. And it was a Ponzi scheme whereby he simply paid back a portion of the money to his existing investors using the money coming in from his new investors. So Charles Ponzi was the original 1920s fraudster who promised people they could make a quick 40% on the doubling of postage stamps, comparing international postage stamps and American postage stamps. And he got 15,000 people, or 40,000 people through the door, and $15 million was lost. And this was how they come up with a Ponzi scheme named after him. And this guy was just running the same thing, where he started off as a broker dealer. So they say. He started off as a broker-dealer. Then he went into investment management. And when he first registered his investment management scheme in September 2006, he claimed to have US $17 billion in money there. And clearly, he didn't really have all that at all. And the regulators never went in and checked. And he had a little tiny audit firm, which operated out of a 13-foot by 18-foot office, called Freakling and Horowitz, which might be called Freak and Horror Show. I don't know. But no one had ever heard of this auditor. Didn't audit anyone else.
No, it sounds like the auditor that was in Springtime for Hitler, you know, in the producers.
Yeah, so how the regulators didn't get onto this is incredible. And this guy was an advisor to the SEC, a big campaign donor. So he basically sort of bought his way to access and power and privilege and was an advisor to the regulators, a big cheer squad member of the, you know, don't regulate, let the capital flow. And over the last 6 or 7 years, the capital has flowed. All this unregulated pools of money have popped up in tax havens. And the funds management industry, at the end of the day, is a winner-takes-all industry. The money all goes to the person who can deliver the best returns. And this guy just concocted his returns, did actually pay out a lot of money. So he's churned over many billions, paying out billions a year. But more billions were coming in, and he played a beautiful game of exclusiveness where he would not let people come into his club. He'd knock people back. So, no, you've got to be really special to come into my club. But we'll let you put a million in first, not the 10 million you want. And if you like it, you can put a few more in. And then a lot of people were putting in, you know, $100 million or most of their savings, because every year this guy delivered 10, 12%. He was Mr. Reliability, and he'd been doing this since 1960. He was the chairman of the NASDAQ. How could he possibly be a fraud? Even his own two sons, who worked in the business, had no idea. And they were the ones who dobbed him in last week when he fessed up to saying, I've basically, you know, my life has been a lie. I've run the world's biggest Ponzi scheme.
So he's fessed up.
He fessed up to his sons. His sons dobbed him in, and they claim they're victims. And now everyone from Steven Spielberg to Santander, the big Spanish bank, billion, a lot of charitable money. There's a lot of Jewish charitable money around the world. There's the Chase Family Foundation out of Jerusalem. They give away $20 million a year. They've just shut their doors and sacked their staff because all their money was with this guy.
So where did the money end up? Not in Liechtenstein. How did it? Where did it disappear to?
Well,
was it gone?
Most of it went back to the clients. Because
right.
every year, so in this big crisis, he's been giving back 10 or 12%. So he's just churning it over. And but the problem is that he claims to be managing $50 billion, and obviously there's not much there. So when people tried to take out $7 billion, they asked for their money back. He didn't have it because he'd already given it out to everyone and then just misstated what he actually claimed he had. So he would give people their annual statement saying, your 100 million is now worth 110 million, or, you know, your 100 million is still there and here's 10 million back to you. And your, you know, your account shows you still have 100 million with us, whereas in reality
there was nothing there.
So it hasn't been quantified as to how much of it, but they're calling it a $50 billion fraud, which is suggesting that all that has gone. And so you'll have a blizzard of litigation, and at the end of the day, I suspect the US government will have to pay up big because they were the regulators who were asleep at the wheel and let this guy get away with it. And, wow, what can you say?
When you hear about these things, Stephen, because, I mean, this is your business, this is what you love sniffing out, what's the first thing that crosses your mind when you first came across this story? When did you hear about it?
Well, just in the last few days, I just didn't believe it. A $50 billion Ponzi scheme, that can't be right. But I guess at the end of a year where $1 trillion has been lost on subprime and banks have been nationalised all over the world and the world's biggest insurer, AIG, has gone broke, I guess nothing surprises at the end of all this. But to have a fraud of this scale...
What's his standing if you chose an equivalent person here?
Well, he's the chairman of the stock exchange, and he's also, maybe he's Frank Lowy, or he's a doyen of the business community. I mean, Frank Lowy started out in business in 1960. He has a huge reputation as world's biggest shopping centre mogul. And Frank's a fund manager at one level because he manages people's money into shopping centres.
Mm-hmm.
But if Frank suddenly came out and said, there's actually not $45 billion of the shopping centre assets here, it's all a mirage, and boom, the shopping centre's all disappeared.
Mm.
That's what's basically happened, but it's at a money management level rather than a physical assets management level. But I guess that's the equivalent. But it's just incredible, and the damage is just so vast. I think that you're going to see. We're going to see a huge regulatory backlash. But the idea now of anyone sitting in Bermuda running $1 billion unregulated, that's just not going to happen again. And everyone's going to be having to be audited and registered. And I mean, I guess these things happen in asset bubbles. The bubble goes on, fraudsters emerge. If the fraudster can have a good reputation and can capture the regulators, then they can avoid detection. But no one's ever done it to this degree, and I've no doubt that Hollywood's already onto it.
Has actually sent an SMS. He said, why do people run Ponzi schemes when they must always fail?
Well, that's right. And clearly he ran a very successful business as a broker-dealer. He was a middleman who made hundreds of millions as a middleman, rose to be the chairman of the NASDAQ, pioneered the first electronic stock exchange. He then clearly at some point crossed the line when he got into investment management. And then, like many people, you have a lifestyle. You remember all these clubs. You got all the yachts and the Florida retreats and these sort of things. You're used to the lifestyle. You have a couple of bad years investments. Your reputation's going to be gone, and you say, well, I can salvage my reputation by actually crossing the line. I've got the regulators sorted out because I tell the regulators how to do things. I advise them. So if I do this little thing, get my little dodgy auditor up here, hide myself in this little room, don't even tell my sons, I can pull it off. And he's been doing it for years.
Oh, Stephen Main, thank you for unravelling that for us.
It's a
complicated
pleasure.
Little thing.
It's very complicated,
a fraud.
But the numbers are very large.
$50 billion.
US.
Out of a bank.